I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it like when Tatum play a Jalen on the breakaway, a Kyrie when he make a trade. And nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth that after you play it, you gotta repeat. So in depth they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. And well wishes go to Gordon. Listen, after every game is very important, Millie.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast with the Rain and Jace. Today, it's me, your boy, Jay King from MassLive.com, here with Sam Jam Packard, the great. He's in Kentucky. I'm in the TD Garden, where the Golden State Warriors just had a bizarrely late practice. This was like the latest practice I have ever attended at any level. Like, it's damn near 10:30 p.m. I'm still in the Garden. It's just a practice night. They are on West Coast time, so I guess it makes sense. But here we are, Rain and Jays, just hustling like always to get you our podcast Monday through Friday. Follow us everywhere. You know the drill. Wherever you get your podcast, follow us. I want to get that out of the way early. Sometimes we don't do that until too late in the podcast. You know, sometimes we don't hype ourselves up enough.
Yeah, if you're a new listener, come on down. I mean, if this is your first time, subscribe right now. You already know it's good.
Just exactly.
Listen to the confidence oozing from the kid and the great.
So Kevin Durant said some interesting comments at practice, I thought, about how he considered Kyrie Irving's decision to request a trade a basketball move. We're going to talk about that a little bit. We're going to answer some questions later. Let's start with the Durant comments, because I thought those were interesting. And obviously he's a guy who has left a good situation. And, you know, he played for the Thunder, who almost knocked off the Warriors last year. He played there, and he was a free agent. He met with Boston, met with Oklahoma City, obviously, ended up choosing the Warriors, which was the best basketball situation for him. But Kyrie was a little different because the Cavaliers had made three straight finals. He was playing with LeBron James. He had already won a championship. So his basketball reasons might have been a little different than Kevin Durant's, although maybe Durant's were the same, and I want to talk about that a little bit. And so basketball-wise, the only reason you would make that move, I think, is to maximize your potential. And Kyrie said a couple things about that, how he wants to maximize his potential. But I just thought it was interesting Kevin Durant used that term, a basketball move, to describe Irving's trade request, because a lot of people thought it was like a sign that he was unhappy with LeBron James, unhappy with the Cavaliers organization, but maybe he just wanted a place where he could do all the things he felt he could do on the basketball court.
Yeah, the my initial reaction, I feel like most people's initial reaction to this is like purely a personal thing. And in terms of basketball and wanting to win basketball games, leaving the best player in the league, leaving his team, it doesn't immediately make sense. But if you think about it, like, the Celtics are a pretty good situation with the young players they have.
But he wasn't necessarily going to go to the Celtics. Like, when you request a trade, you're at the mercy of the team that you request a trade from.
It's a valid point. He could have ended on, we heard that short list, like the Knicks were on there, the Heat were on there. No matter what, he was not going to be, yeah, maybe you're right. It's just that kind of idea of like trying to rise to his potential and do as much as he can outside of the shadow of LeBron James. I don't know. It's a kind of an odd statement from Durant, but it's interesting because Durant, having played against the Cavs in the finals last year, like, knows that team, I would say, decently well, and kind of knows the basketball potential of that team. I don't know. You're right. It's an interesting statement, and I had forgotten that Kyrie didn't get to choose the Celtics because of how, like, effusive his praise has been with Brad Stevens and of how, like, well he's fit in and how much the Celtics seem like to have embraced Kyrie. But you're right. He didn't choose this situation, so I don't know. Maybe Durant made the same mistake and just thought he basically signed with the Celtics.
Yeah, but the thing to me is, when you look at Kyrie, he's almost done things backwards. Like, most guys, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, most guys, they grow up, and they play for their first 4 or 5 years for bad teams. And they get to accumulate those stats, and they get to be the man on teams that aren't great. And then their teams become championship-level teams, and then they have to sacrifice. So then they're at the point in their career where they can say, okay, I've done this, this, this. I've made all NBA teams. I've made all-star teams. It's time for me to go out and win a championship. Kyrie did it backwards. Like, he was thrust as a really young guy into that role where he had to sacrifice, and he never got the chance to kind of stretch his game out and see what he could do as the man. So I do think there's something to the fact that he wanted to see what he could do, and he wanted to see what he could do without LeBron James next to him, and he wanted to see what he could do as a full-time point guard rather than, you know, the off-ball ISO scoring type that he really was in Cleveland. So I think there is some truth to the fact that maybe it was just a basketball move, and maybe he just wanted to spread his wings a little bit and see how high he could fly.
What did you think of the recent LeBron shade on Kyrie, where, I don't remember the exact quote, it was like, LeBron, this is the first time I've
that
in
was
a while
so stupid.
Play with someone who can score and also distribute the basketball. It was just like such a petty LeBron shot that it was like, I almost respect it just because LeBron's team petty now.
Although I will say, I don't know if he took a calculated shot at Kyrie there. Because I think if he was taking a calculated shot, he would have done it in front of the cameras. He would have done it with ESPN there and NBA TV there. And he would have done it for everybody versus rather than just in like an exclusive conversation with Howard Beck. You know,
do you think it was just like a athlete cliche just trying to talk up like one of the guys on his team?
It might have been. It might have just been him just saying something. I mean, I say things on the podcast all the time where I say the wrong thing and I'm like, I don't even believe what I just said. But
that's pretty much my entire bit.
But it's weird. Sometimes you do say the wrong thing and you just misspeak a little bit. And I don't know whether he took a shot. He certainly does take passive aggressive shots sometimes, whether it's on Twitter or somewhere else. I'm not convinced he did it then, because I do think if he was calculating and he wanted to throw Kyrie under the bus for not being a creator, then he would have done it in a way that was everywhere. Although maybe he just figures, I'm LeBron James. If I say this to Howard Beck, it's going to get anywhere no matter what. And it kind of did go everywhere.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that I didn't actually read the Howard Beck article. I just saw everyone aggregate it and kind of the stories that came off of it. So you're going to lose out on a lot of context just from like an interview of that nature where he's just quoting him. But even more removed, I didn't read any context of the entire story or how the quote was set up. So I'm entirely judging this based on LeBron's reputation and like the 3 tweets that I saw. So who knows? It's interesting that to leave the best basketball player in the world would be decided, like framed as a basketball decision, because it's like it's a very selfish basketball decision, because if you want to win, playing with LeBron James has put you in the finals for the past 7 years. Like, if you want to be in the finals,
but
LeBron's a good choice.
Think about it. Let's say you're an assistant GM, and you're an assistant GM of a great team, and you're getting paid a ton of money, and another team comes calling and they say, we want you to run our team. You say, you know what? I want a chance to run my own team. I want a chance to be the final decision maker. I want a chance to have all the pressure on my lap. I want a chance to see what I can actually do when I'm the guy at the top of the food chain. So I understand why you would call that selfish, but I think also it's just a natural thing to want to see what you can do. And especially with the way Cleveland was this summer and how how unstable they were and how LeBron James only has 1 year left on his contract. Nobody knows whether he's going to go back. I think there are a lot of factors that kind of could have been construed as turning that into a basketball decision. So I get it. I get why Kyrie wanted to leave. I think like there are great aspects of playing with LeBron, but he throws teammates under the bus. He wants to take a lot of the credit for himself a lot of the time. So I understand why that could be grating on you to play with him all the time and be so good next to him and not get as much credit as you deserve because so much of the spotlight is on LeBron James. You're always, always, always in the shadow. So I get it both ways. But yeah, I just thought the Durant comments were interesting. Let's get to the questions though, Sam. Just tell
we
me
got
some
a
questions,
lot
baby.
Of Warriors questions. People are hyped up for this Warriors game, as they should.
It's a big game. Big game.
It's all the hoopla. We're adding to the hoopla. Kyrie said after the game against Brooklyn, he's looking forward to it. So am I. I've been like kind of amped for this game ever since the end of the Nets game, and we got a lot of Warriors questions, and then we'll get into some general questions. But this is from Patrick Flynn. Who needs to step up the most for the Celtics for them to have a chance to knock off the Warriors? Who do you think needs to have the biggest game?
Everybody. I think...
Semi-Ojeleye.
I think one of the biggest things will be scoring the basketball. Right now, the Celtics are 19th in offense. Like, you can't go through droughts like they have against Golden State, because as great as the Celtics' defense has been, you don't stop Golden State. Nobody stops Golden State. So they're going to have to figure out ways to get the ball in the basket, whether it's Kyrie Irving being brilliant, whether it's other guys knocking down shots, whether it's Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown showing off like they did against the Brooklyn Nets a little bit. They're going to have to find ways to put the ball in the basket. I don't think they can get by with some of the shaky offense that they've had over the past week or two.
Yeah, it's going to be I feel like it needs to be a combination of Kyrie going off and also just making a bunch of three-pointers, including like every single role player is going to have to step up and knock down their open threes and kind of the dumb Marcus Smart, irrational confidence Terry Rozier threes, because the Warriors are that good.
And it'd be cool if Al Horford continued refusing to miss shots.
That would be very helpful if he continued to shoot 95% from the field, including three-pointers.
He's been ridiculous, man. He has just been outrageous. He's been so damn efficient. It's been really, really impressive what he's done. Dating back to last year's playoffs, he has just been a killer.
He even took, like, one of his misses was a contested three, and it was just because it was the end of the shot clock. But I've never seen him take a contested three before.
I saw your tweet. It was almost like a Carmelo Anthony three. Like, it was a little jab step, like fire in somebody's face. It was very non-Al Horford.
Yeah, because he barely takes the ones that are, like, very open. So, that's part of the reason why he's super efficient, because he sticks to his, like, little hooks in the lane or playing off pick and roll, which he's been amazing at. I don't know what he did to get, like, super rejuvenated. Everyone's talking about young Al Horford. But I'm for it, because he's been probably the MVP of the season. So you're right. It's playing a team like the Warriors, who are beating everyone by like 15. You're going to need Kyrie to step up. You're going to need Al Horford to step up. You're also going to need your other players to step up, just because that's what happens when you're playing great basketball teams.
And then the defense is going to have to be as sharp as ever, because goddamn, the Warriors can play some basketball.
That's the next question perfectly from Micah Angelo. What are the odds the C's can keep the Warriors under 100 points?
Zero.
Yeah, I was going to I mean, I would give them 20%.
I'll give them 1%. You don't hold the Warriors under 100, and especially not in a game where they're going to be focused, they're going to be motivated. It's not happening.
I wanted to talk myself into
unless Ojeleye plays all 48, and then the Warriors will only score like 25 points.
Ojeleye is going to have to play serious minutes, because he's a defensive beast and they're just going to need as much defense as possible. But that line transitions well into the next question. There's I think I lost it here, but who do you think the matchups are on defense? If you're starting off, who defends who for the Celtics when the Warriors are on offense?
I think Tatum on Durant.
Can you start Tatum on Durant? Is he that good, like, one-on-one at this point? I feel like a lot of his steals come in, like, more on weak side or help defense.
I think the length just makes sense, right? And Jaylen Brown is better, I think, at trailing screens. So Klay Thompson makes sense for him. I think you got to go Kyrie on Curry. Big Al on Draymond. And Zaza Baines? Or are you going with – do they go with Marcus Morris? And we'll see.
Marcus on Draymond, and then Horford on See, that's the thing. You'd have to want to attack Zaza, so I think you go smaller and you start Morris, and hopefully the Warriors switch on everything, so you get a lot of Zaza and pick and roll.
I need to see some Marcus Morris beef. We haven't seen any Marcus Morris beef yet.
And this is the perfect game against, like, the guy where you get a little bit – emotions are running too high. You get a little intense. Maybe it gets a little wild out there. This would be a perfect time for Marcus Morris.
It's Morris beef time. We haven't seen the Morris twin animosity out there yet. We just seen, like, mid-range Morris twin.
Yeah, and I feel like he took some time off, so now he's just really trying to get some it's going to take him some time to work off. He can't just start off being super aggressive this early in the season. But now it's a big game, so I'm down. We have a lot of Marcus Smart questions. People are obsessed. Oh, did you happen to see Matt Moore's piece on CBS Sports today, HP Basketball, about Marcus Smart?
I have not read it yet today. Today has just been a vicious day of travel and going to Celtics practice and then taking a nap, which was not so vicious, and then going over to Warriors practice. So I actually have it. I favorited it on Twitter to check out later. But tell me about it. Tell me about it.
It's very interesting. So it's like we all know Marcus can't shoot and he's terribly inefficient. But his numbers, like the team offensive rating when he's on the court, is great. I think it's like the second best on the team. And Matt Moore is just like breaking down the kind of eclipse of why. And it's because he does a very good job of attacking the basket, which no matter what, despite the fact that he never really makes or he shoots a pretty low percentage around the rim, it attracts multiple defenders. And he's very good at making the right decision to pass. And it's a very low turnover guy, so he had some bad moments there against the Nets on Tuesday night. But generally, it's just Marcus making the right decision and playing smart. Oh, I didn't even mean to do that. But it leads to him like impacting winning. That's like basically the entire article is that, yeah, he's not great, but he does everything right and tries real hard. So
yeah, it's funny because he's such a smart player in almost every single way, except for his shot selection. That's it. That's the only thing you could ever get mad at Marcus Smart about is he takes bad shots. He doesn't realize he's not a shot maker. And sometimes that he gets in trouble because of that. Otherwise, like, he's become a really good passer. He can run pick and rolls. He does a lot of things. So shout out to Marcus Smart, who's playing some smart hoops.
Well, we got a lot of questions about his contract. So one person, Boston Joe at Joe Rosansky, is asking, what are the odds Ainge brings back Smart next year? At this point, I'm leaning 65-35 in favor of Ainge not matching an offer. And then Kim Moran at Big Chriso says, how is Marcus Smart feeling about Robert Covington's deal? What's Smart's market now?
I don't know. The contracts are all so random almost that even contracts that seem like they might have some impact on the market, whatever, it's all based on situation, and especially with restricted free agency like Marcus Smart will enter. There are a lot of things that can just either, you know, all it takes is one team to come in with a huge offer sheet, and then the Celtics will have a really tough decision to make because their salary is going to be sky high. They're going to have to pay the luxury tax for years. They'll have a tough decision to make if that comes in. But there aren't many teams with cap space. I could see it going the other way where the market for Smart just isn't there. So I don't know. There's kind of a window, I think. Marcus Smart isn't helping himself, though, by shooting like 29% or whatever he's doing, even though he does so many other things. It's going to be tough to get a huge contract if he shoots around 30% all season. Hot take there by Jay King.
I mean, but he does. He impacts winning so much. It's just weird. You just wouldn't think of the Celtics not wanting to re-sign him, but you're right. With restricted free agency, it takes like the Nets just offering him $25 million or something just like outrageous for it just not to be like necessity. The thing is, I feel like the fact that they have Rozier on the roster as a kind of a backup facilitator makes it a little bit more likely that's like they wouldn't match Smart. I mean, they're totally different players, is mostly in the fact that Smart can guard basically every position, and Rozier can hit threes. Like, it's not the exact right comparison, but I feel like just Rozier playing this well this season makes the likelihood of Smart not re-signing a little bit more likely.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll see. And then it could matter whether the Lakers pick conveys this year, because if it does, then the Celtics are going to have to commit that salary to a lottery pick. So there are so many factors, a lot of factors going on, and we'll see.
That's definitely something I learned from, like, this past NBA offseason, is that everything is fluid and anything can, like, change at any time. So you never really know what's going to happen, because we had no idea. We spent, like, 2 months talking about, like, preparing for Isaiah and Gordon Hayward. Then we talked another month about Kyrie and Gordon Hayward. Then Hayward went down. Like, so,
not even talking about Markel Fultz, how we just kind of assumed he was going to be on the Celtics.
I forgot about that one.
Yeah. So, wild
well,
summer,
that leads
man.
Us into the next thing. Perfect segues tonight. I don't know. We're nailing the segues into questions. Maybe that's me. Maybe I'm an amazing host.
I would say it's definitely you. Amazing host.
Perfect. I did go to the Connecticut School of Broadcasting, so I am classically trained.
I did not. As I'm sure everyone could tell.
From Caleb Valiton at Caleb, or, oh yeah, that makes sense. His name's Caleb. Tatum versus Karl Anthony Towns. Who do you take right now? I love this question.
I'm taking Karl Anthony Towns. And Tatum has been fantastic. Tatum has been, I think, the best rookie in his class. I'm not including Ben Simmons because he wasn't in the same draft, but Karl Anthony Towns is just really, really freaking good. And until I see Jason Tatum do the things that he's doing at a higher volume, then I got to go with Towns. But Tatum has done everything. Tatum has done everything efficiently. Tatum has had an outstanding rookie season, and I'm not ruling out Tatum becoming like an absolute stud, like freaking star. He's 19. He's playing well-rounded, efficient basketball and really, really good basketball already. But Karl Towns is a stud.
Now, see, I don't watch a lot of Wolves basketball, but I feel like in just following on basketball Twitter and listening to podcasts and stuff, people say that Towns' defense has not been great, and he's not like the most, like, he doesn't have the highest defensive awareness. That's why I think about it with like NBA 2K rating, defensive awareness. But yeah, I mean, Towns has proven that he's been good for past 2 years. That being said, Tatum is hasn't done anything bad yet ever. Like, he's just done.
He missed a dunk though.
Oh my god, I forgot to bring that up yesterday. That was terrible. That was should be on Shaq and a Fool. That was like a real. He put some real bad tape out there.
Yeah, that was bad. That was bad optics.
Terrible optics. But you got to imagine that. I don't know. Tatum is he is younger, so maybe you go higher upside. Plus, his defense is just it's been really, really good. He just is consistently getting two or three steals a game, or what feels like two or three steals. It feels like he gets a block every game. His defensive awareness is just outrageous for a rookie, and his length is absurd. So
believe me, I am not at all ruling out much of anything for Jason Tatum at this point. That dude can play basketball really good.
The only reason you don't take Jason Tatum right now is because it's only been 15 games. But, like, otherwise, I feel like you could – I'm leaning Tatum just because
– Ooh, little Tatum.
I mean, just because of that defense thing. I don't really know if Karl Anthony Towns sucks at defense, but people tell me he does, and I believe people.
He also averaged 25 and 12 last year.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Not going to lie. Good stats.
Not bad. not too shabby.
From Joe Cooprider, Coey Jupes.
Ooh, little Coey Jupes.
Which other team in the East do you think the Celtics match up well or poorly against in a hypothetical playoff series? So let's start with
the
poorly.
East stinks. Everybody in the East stinks except the Cavs because they have LeBron and the Celtics and maybe the Wizards and Raptors.
What do you think about the Bucks now that they got Bledsoe?
I don't think Bledsoe's a huge difference maker. I don't see. I mean, Giannis is amazing. Giannis can – he's outrageous. The things he does, the way he gets to the hoop, the plays he makes at his size, just outrageous. But I don't see them as like a really good team. I don't think the East has very many really good teams. I'm not sold on basically anyone in the East.
We saw the Raptors recently. They felt like they're Jonas Valanciunas is a sick joke. They have some real weak spots on that roster. Norm Powell, I know he went out, but he's just like, I don't really believe in him.
I'm a Norm Powell guy. I've always been a Norm Powell guy.
They look very small out there with Norm Powell. Like, compared to the Celtics, they had a real tiny team just with Lowry and Norm Powell when compared to like Jaylen Brown at the two. So I don't believe in them. I don't believe in the Wizards. The Wizards have had some terrible losses, and you just have to believe in the Cavs because of track record. So that being said, I guess if we don't believe in any of those teams, do you think it would be like, are the Celtics the favorite right now in the East?
No. Cavs will forever be the favorite as long as LeBron James is LeBron James. Someone's got to knock them off for them to not be the favorite. The dude has reached 7 straight NBA finals. He's so good that people don't even talk about the fact that the Cavs don't even have a second team All-NBA player who's injured right now. Like, literally, people don't even – they barely even talk about the fact that the Cavs are missing Isaiah Thomas. They're wondering about this and that, and are they done? Should we rule them out? It's like anybody would be struggling without a second-team All-NBA player for the entire season so far. It's just because he's LeBron, people think his team should never struggle. And that's just how it is. And they are old. They're really freaking old. Some of their guys are totally washed up. Like, that's a bad defensive roster. But once Isaiah comes back, they're going to score the piss out of the basketball as long as he can move like he used to.
See, that's the thing. That's like a sneaking fear I have as a Celtics fan, is a really motivated Isaiah coming back to the Cavs in like January or February, because we've seen what that little motherfucker could do. He's quite good at basketball. He's like very good. And just him playing super pissed off with like LeBron James as a facilitator and a guy who can kind of just take over in big moments, and Isaiah can just really be the kind of a go-to scorer and play off ball. They're a very dangerous team. And so there's like, as well as the Celtics are playing, you can never count out LeBron James, especially with a pissed off Isaiah. And that reminds me, I am coming out probably when you're listening to this podcast, is Book of Isaiah 2, like the little documentary about his off season. And like, they show him on phones, like with the doctors, they show him, basically, like, it's a real behind-the-scenes look. I just was, like, basing this entirely off the trailer. This is free advertising for this documentary, by the way. But it looked cool as fuck, just because Isaiah is just a real cool dude, so I still like him a lot. It's going to be very interesting, one, to see that documentary, and then two, to see him bounce back, because we've seen motivated Isaiah, and it's generally bad for the team he's playing against.
Yes, it is usually not good for the team he's playing against. But the hip is a huge question mark. We'll see.
All right. From @Brian0414, do you think the Celtics are missing their chance at the finals this year because Hayward is hurt and Al will be a year older next year?
Well, see, the Al going a year older, people thought when he first signed with the Celtics, there was some question about whether he would still be worth his contract by the end of it. I think the answer right now looks like a resounding hell yes. Hell yes, Al Horford is going to be worth that contract by the end of it. Al Horford has only gotten better. Al Horford is playing the best basketball of his career right now. So Al Horford being a year older, shit, that might be good. like he has just kept himself in great shape. He's added the three-point shot to his game. He's gotten super efficient. And Al Horford, Jason Tatum being a year older, Jaylen Brown being a year older, when Hayward comes back to the Celtics, those guys having bigger roles will only help them and make them more comfortable around Hayward and give the Celtics such a dynamic team. With Hayward, it's going to be so dynamic. It would have been so much fun to watch this year. But whenever he comes back, with the way Tatum and Brown have shown out during Hayward's absence, they are going to be so tough to stop. Their defense is going to be really, really real. And I'm looking forward to it. I don't want to spend too much time dwelling on it because obviously he probably won't play for the rest of the season. But Hayward is a perfect piece for everything the Celtics do. He would help. He'll help their offense. He'll help them score. He'll help make things easier for Irving, for Horford, for Tatum, for Brown, for everybody else. And then he's this even more versatile, even more athletic than a lot of the guys on their team, who are already super versatile athletic defenders. He's really good.
And that just made me think it's like might be another reason that you see them let go of Marcus Smart, just because with these guys like Brown and Tatum taking a step up, you're going to like have them need them to get minutes. And then you're going to have all these minutes you're going to need to go give to Gordon Hayward. But you're right. It seems like Gordon Hayward is pretty good at every little thing in the game. And with a versatile team like this that does a lot of like movement on offense, a lot of passing, a lot of cutting, he just seems like the perfect kind of Brad Stevens designed basketball robot to just plug in. But yes, it's bad that they would have probably been better if Hayward was playing right now, but I don't know if we can really like dwell on that and say they missed their chance this year. I mean, that happened and they got to move on. I only got one more question left from at Andre Jones at Dre Factor X 691. How do Smart, Rozier, shouts to Tito, and Morris improve their shot selection? Will we realistically see an improvement from any of the above this year?
Can we just talk about Marcus Morris's shot selection real quick?
Yo, he doesn't pass, and it's great.
And not only that, but he takes, like, off-balance shots, like
fadeaways.
Off the dribble, fadeaway. He takes some shots where he just, like, launches himself back off his left leg, like just one-legged. It's not like the Dirk fadeaway, because the Dirk fadeaway is really controlled and really smooth. He like launches himself back, and he his release angle is just outrageous. But you know what? He hits him, and with the second unit, if he is going to play with the second unit like he did against Brooklyn, that second unit has a lot of bad shooters. Rozier, Smart. If they go with Baines and Tice, those guys are efficient, but they're not like offensive options. So sometimes Morris ISO is okay. Like he can just carry the offense a little bit. They can get a ton of stops because all those guys can defend and just climb on Morris's back. Enjoy the ride, boys. It's going to be a fun Marcus Morris mid-range ride.
There's going to be some games won on just a Marcus Morris run at like the end of the third quarter, start of the fourth quarter. Sometimes you just got to ride ISO Morris because ISO Mook, because you're right. The second unit is not a great like half court offensive team. And if they're not getting stops, they're not going to be like scoring that well. And sometimes if you're just going to let Marcus Morris take like the craziest shots in the world, they're going to go in. Like we saw that in Brooklyn, he had over 20 points. Like he's more than capable of making them. You just have to accept now that if he gets the ball, he's not passing. And it's like, just enjoy the ride. It's great. I'm a huge fan of Marcus Morris so far, mostly because the Celtics have won 13 games. So like there's nothing to hate on.
Yeah. There will be times when Marcus Morris's shot selection gets rough and gets frustrating. But when he goes wild, it's just mid-range Mook, man. Mid-range Mook doing his thing.
All right, let's wrap this up with this is just my question. Do the Celtics make it 14 in a row against the Golden State Warriors on Thursday night?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's possible, and if they do, shit, who knows how long this streak could go.
It's going to 20 if they win tomorrow. That's my pick.
You heard it from Sam first. But no, I think the Warriors beat them. The Warriors are playing some great hoops. Celtics are too, but Warriors, their offense is, I don't think the Celtics can keep pace with it.
Yeah, the thing is that the Warriors are the toughest team to kind of score with in the league, and they also have a pretty damn good defense. So I think the Celtics are going to really struggle to score points consistently, especially if they can kind of clamp down. They can put Klay on Kyrie, which will be interesting to see who they put Steph Curry on in those situations.
Yeah, because like Celtics have post-up threats everywhere else.
Jaylen Brown would destroy Steph Curry off the dribble or in the post. So would Marcus Smart. So that's going to be a real interesting matchup that I guess we haven't even explored yet. But where do they do? Who do you think the Warriors put on Steph Curry? Or do they just, for that reason, they probably try to keep him on Kyrie as much as possible?
Maybe. I don't know. We'll see. We will see. All right. I'm looking forward to this one. It's going to be fun to be in the Garden.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one tomorrow night. Tune into that. Tune into all of our shows on the Locked On Celtics podcast. You can subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts. It's pretty obvious. If you're listening to us now, just use that to listen to us again in the future. Subscribe, leave 5 stars. That's been another episode of Locked On Celtics Podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.
Yo, I like how you just took the reins there. That was smooth.
Oh, thank you. I felt like we had to close it because I was asking the question.
That was boom. You knew what the game needed. You gave the game what it needed.